Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
It's time for The Deuce with Jimmy Chavez on 1620 The Zone. All the headlines you need in 2 minutes or less.
The good stuff continues for Omaha Hockey. They picked up additional votes but remain just outside this week's USCHO Top 20 national ratings. The Mavericks are the top vote getter among unranked teams with 60 points. And more good news for them, as freshman Jacob Gaben has been named the NCHC Defenseman of the Week. He blocked 5 shots and had an assist last weekend as the Mavs swept a pair of games from Miami, Ohio. UNO allowed just 1 goal, and they moved into 3rd place in the conference. College basketball, not good for the defending national champions.
By the way, that shot, Langston Love hit that shot over Grady Dick.
Yeah, but a big game. It's worth getting in there.
Yeah,
it's
Love
hey,
over
Grady Dick. Dick played. He hadn't played well the last couple of games. He played well last night, but they can't shoot the 3 ball and they can't defend it.
Jalen Wilson played well as well, but they lost 75-69. The call was from John Morris, a good friend at the Baylor Sports Network in Learfield. 75-69, the Jayhawks lose to Baylor. The loss ties their longest skid since Bill Self took over 20 years ago, but it's the first time Kansas has lost 3 straight to ranked teams since February 1989. That was Roy Williams' first year at KU. They're now 16-4 overall and 5-3 in conference play, and things don't get any easier for them. They travel to Kentucky this weekend at a Big 12 SEC challenge. So with losses by Kansas and Houston over the weekend, Purdue returns to number 1 of the polls. The Boilers at 19-1 overall and 8-1 in the Big Ten. Had dropped to number 3 after 4 weeks at number 1 following a loss to Rutgers on January 3rd. That is 1-6 straight. The rest of the top 5, Alabama number 2, Houston, Tennessee, and Kansas State. That round out the top 5. Yeah. Big week for the Wildcats. Yeah. Win the Tang Day.
Kansas State is at Iowa State tonight over at Hilton. Caleb Grill is questionable, though, for Iowa State. So KU, not only they play at Rupp Arena on Saturday, then they have Iowa State, Kansas State, and Texas.
Yeah. It's going to be kind of a UConn slide for them.
Well, the reality is hitting. Usually KU has a high-end point guard and a big man. And a lot of times those are together.
Yeah.
Well, their point guard play hasn't been good. DeJuan Harris is...
Yeah.
And they don't have depth. They don't have that Azubuike.
Yeah, or
Embiid,
even McCormick last year.
Yeah, so they're getting exposed a little bit, but Cryer and Flagler, two great guards.
Yeah.
You know, watching that game last night, I was like, whoa. Scott Drew has been at Baylor for 20 years. 20 years been at Baylor. Now, they're built a little bit differently than they've been like during their national championship team, but their guards, those two guards will attack you. Just another night in the Big 12. By the way, before we get to Sam, this is a great night of basketball, whether it be college basketball or high school basketball. I can't recall a Tuesday night card in high school basketball in girls and boys in this area as good as tonight's is around the area. Prep West Side on the boys' side, you got Scutt and Pius are down in Lincoln in a boys and girls doubleheader. East-Southeast boys are playing. This is a great night for ball, y'all. It's always a great time on Tuesdays to talk to Sam McEwen of the World Herald. Good morning, my fine sir.
Good morning. How are you guys?
Good. Hey, but let me ask you about basketball real quick, about Nebraska basketball. Do you think the evaluation of Fred is still going on, or do you think the evaluation is he put enough out there in year 4 that you could make a determination?
Yeah, that's the key question after the injury to Manuel Vandermel. It's interesting. You know, I've been turning that over a little bit. I think where I ended up is the evaluation isn't quite over. I think you have to mark whether the team continues to play really hard, and whether, you know, as you look out on that floor, as unfair as it may be, the Denham Dawson and Jamarcus Lawrence, the Wilhelm Breidenbach, those three in particular, are they getting better?
Mm-hmm.
And because you know, at some point you need your program to not be about the fourth or fifth year guys that you bring in.
Yeah.
I mean, Bandamel wasn't coming back next year anyway. And so, you know, you watch those younger players. Are they getting better? Are they making plays? Are they getting better on offense? So you do watch those things. I don't know how many wins that translates to.
Mm-hmm.
It may only be three more. And that, you know, it's tough without Gary and Bandamel, especially when, you know, you hang your hat on defense. But no, I think you continue the evaluation and you really examine, you know, are some of those younger players getting better, or are you having to rely on so almost solely guys that you know will not be back next year? Derek Walker's not back. Dan Griesel's not back. Bandamel wouldn't have been back. So that's something I'm watching.
Mm-hmm.
I'm watching those three players in particular.
Yeah.
Do they get better?
Sam, wanted to turn over to a big day recruiting-wise for Nebraska, and I want to start with sort of the trifecta for Georgia and Jacob Hood, the offensive lineman, how that one might be different as far as his immediate use compared to the other guys when it comes to this upcoming season. Where do you kind of look at Hood as more of sort of that prototypical development guy, even though he is coming from Georgia?
I do, yes. I think, you know, there wouldn't be any particular pressure on him to play as a redshirt freshman if he were at Nebraska. I don't think there's any particular pressure as it relates to him playing right away here, you know, now that he's transferring from Georgia. Just because he came from Georgia doesn't mean that he's going to play right away. The other two guys will probably need to play right away. Gilbert and Sherman are, you know, Sherman's a third year. Gilbert's a, I guess he's a fourth year.
Mm-hmm.
So those guys were brought in to play right away. Borders was brought in to play right away. I think Corey Collier, we'll see. You know, I don't know that he needs to play right away out in the secondary. I think they've got some players back there. But the vast majority of the players that they've brought in are going to play right away. And, of course, Kemp and Fleet, they only have 1 year left. So they don't have a choice.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's the one guy, the outlier, who you're just like, let's see where it goes. I think it's reflective of how hard it is to get really good offensive linemen out of the portal. Because I don't know that Jacob Hood is somebody I would describe at this moment as a potential all-conference player. He's going to have to develop, I think, quite a bit. But he is a body that you can add to the room.
Hey, you've been around this for a long time. And you know, with Nebraska's struggles, we've seen many years of transition classes when a new coach comes in. What's your read on how Matt Rhule has gone about putting together his transition class while he's also trying to get to know the roster that is returning and not just blowing guys out before he, you know, sight unseen, that he's going to let them go through spring, and a spring where I can't recall, Sam, Nebraska ever, because this is the numbers game because of, you know, graduation and stuff, that Nebraska's going to have about 80 scholarship players that are going to go through spring football. What's your read on how Matt Rhule has gone about setting up spring while he's trying to manage and flip this roster?
It's been very aggressive. And, you know, I was not surprised by the number of transfers, because I think you need to have that as part of your recruiting diet from here on out. I am surprised by the number of high school players. I think it's high.
Mm-hmm.
And what is it, 26 or 27 as of Jeremiah Charles commit, right?
Mm-hmm. 20,
and then you're probably gonna,
yeah, 26.
Okay, and then you're going to go up probably one with Lefetu, who came in for a visit. That's a big number. And then you add the transfers to it. So you're going to end up somewhere around 40 or 42, mm-hmm, by the time, you know, the summer comes, and you're still probably going to look for a player or two. You know, you can't just say, well, we're done with the portal because we got a bunch of guys in January. I mean, you got to look through the May group, and there's going to be some players in there that you may want to add to your team. So So, you know, at the end of the day, they're going to end up adding a lot of players. It's very aggressive. I think we have to have some level of hesitancy with the high school class. There is a lot of kids in this class who are projected and who are developmental players. And you know, it's one thing to say, well, you know, you got the transfer portal, you can run these guys off after a year if they're not very good. But if you mean what you say about being a developmental program, you really can't run them off. Like, you have to take the time to develop them, because some of these guys are not going to play right away. I mean, they're just not. So, you know, it's a pretty big investment to make just months into joining a program. They will probably add another 25 to 30 next year in high school kids that they probably will know better than some of the ones that they've added. So, you know, it's going to be an incredible overhaul. Now, with Charles and Smith Flores, obviously their high school coach, who is now Nebraska's tight ends coach, knows those two really well. So there's a little bit of an advantage, you know, baked in there, where you're like, we know more about these kids than we would if we were recruiting them from a high school where the coach wasn't joining the college program. So, you know, but still, it's a big number, and we'll see how Rule and his staff handle it.
Hey, Sam, I feel like we maybe had this conversation early when Matt Rule was first hired, but, you know, kind of along those lines of spring competition, if we look at some of the carryovers from this roster that didn't see the field a lot, and to put you on the spot a little bit here, is there maybe a guy or two that you are kind of keeping your eye on that could maybe benefit from either the system that either you're going to see offensively or defensively, or just having different coaches having a fresh perspective, some guys that you think, hey, might have a new or better opportunity than what they had maybe the previous couple of years?
That's a good question. I think they've, a lot of those guys left. I think what's left behind are largely players who contributed in the past. Mm-hmm. And then the few that I can think of, you know, would be defensive backs.
Yep.
Potentially there. I think Ramir Johnson's going to get a better shake than he got last year. That was a bizarre situation. So I think Ramir Johnson will probably get more of a look from this staff than he did from the Whipple era staff. Whatever was going on there, it's not entirely clear to me, but I think Ramir Johnson's won. Defensively, I think Javen Wright, who the other coaching staff like, is probably going to have a role in this defense that's more defined and more of a roamy, rangy player who they can move all over the place. So I suppose that would be true of Gabe Stenger, too. And then potentially, you know, I don't know what they want to do with Jake Applegate. We haven't dove in deeply enough. I'm not sure Tony White knows, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, he's got to see some of these young kids that have never played. Javen Wright is one that I think of, who was probably a true nickel last time, but whatever they want to try to do with a player like that now, I think he'll have a home. Players like that, you know, there might be an offensive lineman or two who will benefit from a different kind of offense, but I honestly don't think the offense is going to be that different in that regard. So we'll see what happens.
Sam McCune of the World Herald joining us here on Mornings with Sharp and Hanley. Yesterday, Bill Bush, who is still living in Lincoln, was on with Sip and Jake in Lincoln, and it was a really, really good conversation. And we all know Bill is a fantastic person, and he's a really, really good interview. And we saw the impact that he had on defense. But he talked about the defensive side of their walkthrough before the Iowa game, how good it was. Guys were on point. They knew the scouting report. They didn't have any issues on the day before the Iowa game on going through everything, that they had a plan and everybody was good. That was one of their best walkthroughs. That was on, and I know it was a walkthrough and people might roll their eyes, but consider they're coming off, their season is basically over. It's ahead of a rivalry game. Ironically, Matt Rule, who it's just been released, was with Will and Llewellyn, on Bussin' with the Boys. He referenced that game, which he was closely watching, as a game where, man, you know what? When I think of culture, I look at that game and the way Nebraska performed against Iowa when they weren't going to a bowl game, but they treated it like a bowl game. I'm paraphrasing a little bit. So with with that said, you know, we're all caught up in building the roster for 23, and now we're going to step back now that, you know, kind of recruiting is about over, and you know, we're about 7-8 weeks from spring football, and we're going to start looking at the roster. What kind of, in your opinion, what kind of culture is Matt Rhule and his staff going to walking into right now that they're seeing a little bit in the weight room that they're going to see a lot more over the next 2 months?
I think it's it's a culture that's probably been through a lot, and I think it's actually a team that you know relatively liked their former head coach Scott Frost, relatively liked the interim head coach. Liked the former defensive coordinator, liked the interim defensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. So I don't think there was like a lot of like acrimony there. And to be clear, the culture on defense is a credit to Eric Chenander, first and foremost. Like, he built that defense. Those are his players. The fact that they carried that out the last 9 games is a credit to the culture he created. And that's gotten a little lost. Mm-hmm. When the calendar turned toward horrible offenses that almost any defense was going to do well against, compared to some of the teams that they played early in the season,
mm-hmm.
Like Oklahoma and Georgia Southern, which were both much better offenses than Iowa. But I think the culture isn't bad. I don't want to, because we kind of do this with every other coaching staff,
mm-hmm.
the ones that aren't part of the establishment, we say they have to win right away because they're not part of the tree or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to do that. I thought that was probably accurate with Riley, you know, because they had won a bunch of games in the previous 4 years and he needed to come in and like win right away. And they didn't, they were 6-7. But I'm not going to say that about a program that has missed the postseason for 6 straight years. Your culture, to some degree, is what your record is on the field. And, you know, in the last 4 years, it was 5-7, 3-5, 3-9, and 5-4-8. And, you know, that's kind of what Nebraska is. They played very hard in a lot of those games, but they lost a lot of them. They lost a lot of close games. I think the phrase "knowing how to win" may be something that needs to be examined and probably will be examined by Rhule and his staff. But I don't think there's any question that people around here play hard, they try hard, they care. They're good guys. You don't have a police blotter list that's blowing up. I mean, it's not like that. So I think there's a lot of things around here that are pretty well in place. The challenge just becomes, how do you turn that into winning? And how do you turn that into winning in the specific context of the Big Ten West? And then how do you turn that into winning when the Big Ten West goes away and you have to play, you know, you're thrown into the deep end of the pool and you don't, you know, teams don't get to avoid Michigan and Ohio State automatically. They might, but they don't automatically get to do so. You know, I'm sure Indiana and Maryland would love to hang out in the Big Ten West for a couple of years and swap places. But they don't have the luxury of avoiding those teams, whereas last year's Big Ten West champion, Purdue, did.
Sam, and kind of getting back, and this is all tied into the recruiting and the roster makeover too, we were sort of having a fun conversation, but I think it even kind of goes to like a larger point when you get the news like yesterday with, you know, the two high school commits as well from Texas. When you think of Matt Rhule and just his presence on the road, what are you kind of gathering? What are you sort of taking away from just the best way to describe Matt Rhule, his personality as it relates to recruits, as it relates to being able to sell these guys, not only in this program, but selling on himself and his plan?
Well, I think the thing that I appreciate about him is he's just willing to put himself out there, you know, and he's willing to ingratiate himself and build those relationships and not assume anything. And I think that's the thing that I probably appreciate about him most is that he's not assumptive. He, you know, I mean, Ed Foley's going to schools that probably won't produce a ton of Husker football players in the future, but they're not assuming anything.
Yeah.
And so I appreciate that about them. And I appreciate that about Rhule. He's not, this will sound kind of whatever, but I appreciate the fact that the first coach to visit Dylan Raiola was Matt Rhule. I appreciate that. And the reason I do is because it would be very easy to say, well, you know, we'll be the third guy in, or, you know, we're going to make sure he knows that we like him, but we don't want to act too thirsty. No, just be the first person there. Like, I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's an honesty about the way that Rhule goes about things that I like, even if it appears pretty aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
I'm okay with that. Like, I think he's pretty authentic in that way, that he, you know, he's not going to let Dylan Raiola think they're not going to play it cool with the number one player in the country. They're going to put a full court press on, and if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But they're never going to act like, you know, well, we're Nebraska, and I don't think we're going to get this guy anyway, so we're just going to have one toe in the water. I think that's what I've seen from Rhule, is that he's kind of jumped all the way in, and he needs it.
Yep, I agree. Sam, as always, we appreciate the time. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's Sam McKeown of the Omaha World Herald. And I said this before you and I got together, is listening to Rhule as the Nebraska head coach. And it's refreshing to have somebody that hasn't been around this. Okay, so they think some things that we take for granted, that we've been involved with or been going to forever.
Yeah.
It's new to them. So it's refreshing to have all of these coaches that have really no connection whatsoever to here. They're now experiencing it for the first time, and all the emotions and, you know, the reaction of everybody that they come in contact with. And I said this will be an important thing for Rhule, and I think this is where it'll help him. Now, he can't really do anything until they start playing games. All he can do is do his job.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? They don't push up the schedule and say, okay, your first game's February 1st. His first game is until the end of August. So all he can do his job and build a roster and build a staff and do things that he does because he likes the game of football and he likes where he's at. And I said it'll be important for him to go first. I think there have been times where the head football coach at Nebraska, they make you go first, okay? You do something, then I'll react, okay? I'm the football coach at Nebraska.
Yeah.
He said, I'm going to go first, and before you embrace me, I'm going to embrace you.
Right.
Instead of vice versa, which we have seen a collection of coaches have gone with, you embrace me first, and then we'll talk. He said, I'm going to embrace you first. And I think he is extremely genuine, and we'll see what that equates to on the field. But something we didn't get to yesterday, but I teased at the end. So there are little things that, as we get to know him, and now about, you know, coming up on about 2 months that he's been the football coach here, is subtle things that he does that are so important. Whether it be Ed Foley in his pickup truck driving around the state of Nebraska and eating all of our food, okay?
Jeez.
Sam's right. He's visiting places that probably will never produce, but that's important, okay? Because they show that you matter.
Mm-hmm.
And we're here for you, you're here for us. Everybody can go to Ainsworth, they can go to Westside, they can go to Gretna, they can go to Omaha North, they can go to Bellevue West. Any coach can do that. But Nebraska has chosen to go to places that probably hasn't seen a Nebraska coach maybe ever.
Right.
So that's a big deal. You know, it's a big deal in small towns that are a long way away from Lincoln, and you can't get to Lincoln to see a game. Ed Foley essentially is bringing Nebraska football into your hallways. I will tell you another subtle thing and a very, very savvy move. Matt Rhule, and they went and they've already visited Omaha Bryan. Matt Rhule the other day tweeting out the Omaha Bryan football t-shirt with their slogan on it. I don't know if he realizes how big that was. You know, people in South Omaha, you know, we all know people from South Omaha. Mm-hmm. They have the chip on their shoulder.
Oh, yeah.
And especially when you're in a place like Omaha Bryan.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you're competing in OPS and football and your numbers are down, but man, you get out there and you go at it every day of the week, and then on Friday you get a chance to shine, and it's tough.
Yeah.
Okay, it's an uphill battle.
Yeah.
We do a Bryan game a year. But man, there's some people that are invested in that school and in that football program. And will they eventually get the next Ken Clark? God, you hope so. By the way, rest in peace, Kenny Clark, about as good as it was.
But people in that part of Omaha, and especially the Bryan community, for a Nebraska football coach to tweet something out about them that has nothing to do with Bud Crawford or relative to Bud Crawford, but it's simply a standalone, man, that's huge. And that's the part of doing your job where I'll embrace you first before you embrace me. And then hopefully this will all come together. And I'm here to tell you, I want to help Nebraska football get back. But there's also part of me that believes with Matt Rhule. Matt Rhule's got a chip on his shoulder as well after what happened with Carolina. Mm-hmm. I know it's the NFL, but that departure wasn't great. And so he wants to prove to people, I can still coach football,
right,
regardless of where I'm at.
Well, and there was a lot of people that were curious. I wouldn't even say reluctant, but were curious on how Matt Rhule would bounce back, because everybody knows him as a good college football coach. Didn't have a great spell there in the NFL. So people were curious, would that impact his next job, whether it was the NFL or college? And so when he got the Nebraska job and he was mentioned for a lot of other jobs, people were always kind of using that narrative a little bit. But, you know, and I want to go back to something you were talking about with the importance of not being assumptive, of just saying, hey, you know what? We're going to make the first move, you know? You're going to be the aggressor. And when it comes to in-state talent, because I know a lot of us have a little bit more of that image of some recent misses. And I think Zane Flores comes to mind for probably most people of like, well, why wasn't Nebraska at least showing some love? And I think that that is a good example for the Frost coaching staff. But I also, I want to take this back to Bo as well. For a defensive-minded guy in a two-gap scheme, there are two guys that I will always bring up when it comes to this conversation of being the aggressor and just showing that you care, especially one in particular in a very small school. When you think of Drew Ott, who ended up going to Iowa, didn't get a lot of attention from Nebraska. And I know a lot of the reason was, well, it doesn't seem like he would necessarily fit a two-gap scheme. There was some vague, hey, how you doing, but nothing immediate, nothing that could have been impactful of having a guy like Drew Ott, who ended up playing pretty high-level football before he dealt with the injuries over at Iowa. Other guy, you know him as well as I do, too, that has made it very clear, had Nebraska got in earlier, it would have been very hard for him to turn down. That's Harrison Phillips. Another guy that, look, Millard West produces good athletes in all different sports, but to kind of chalk Harrison Phillips as a guy that just isn't really going to fit into our defensive line of what we look for, to me, that's unacceptable, because if you are a good enough coach, you have a good enough coaching staff, I feel like you can develop those guys into where you're going to be able to utilize them, as opposed to seeing Harrison Phillips go off to Stanford or Drew Ott go right across the river to Iowa, for a team that could actually hurt you. Having those types of relationships early in the process, I do think they mean a lot, because hearing from those guys, and a lot of them have said, boy, if Nebraska got in early, not saying I would definitely go with them, but it would be really challenging to say no to them. But a lot of them have made it pretty known that they just didn't show as much interest. I don't want to say that's why Matt Rhule is doing this, because I think it's authentic. I think he wants to start working from within and then branching out. They've got guys in Texas. They've got guys that are all over the country, but the efforts that are going on in state, and I get it, sometimes recruiting on people fall on deaf ears because, like, don't tell me about the labor. I just want to see the baby. But this is part of that process.
One Mason quote.
It's going to be very, very important for Nebraska. And like you, I appreciate the lengths as to which they're going to places like Bryan, going to every school that may not produce one player that could be any more than a walk-on, once every 5 years. But those relationships are there, as Sam said. You're not assuming that that relationship isn't going to pay off at some point.
Yeah, he made Matt Rhule in it. This was a conversation. This is probably about a month ago. He made a comment about he wants to help Nebraska get their name back, and I immediately thought, yes. I mean, I think everybody that walks in the door of late says, I want to be the coach that helps Nebraska get back to respectability, that Saturdays matter again. But that's something that's stuck with me is, again, I think it's twofold. I think it's he takes it as a personal challenge to help Nebraska football turn things around. But when I hear him say, get the name back, I also think he's talking about himself. because, I mean, he's pretty confident, but the experience in Carolina and stuff that was said about him as he left the door or while he was there, I think that's his chip on his shoulder. All right. Coming up a little bit later, Brian Christopherson will join us. Our discussion earlier in the first hour about bands that never retire. On cue, Panic at the Disco has split.
Oh!
So Panic and Disco are going their separate ways.
Oh. So do we set a timetable when they'll come back?
Or otherwise known as Brendan, who is the front man for them. He's leaving.
They'll be back. Don't worry. If you're a big Panic at the Disco fan.
They were together forever.
Are there hardcore Panic at the Disco fans, though? Or are they just being like, yeah, I'd see them if I can pay less than $30.
If you are, do you admit to it?
No. Like, who's your
favorite
band?
Certainly somebody.
Brendan
Urie
is pretty good.
There's always going to be, every band is going to have their fanatic, but is there like a legion of fans? No.
Probably not like, Fish or the Grateful Dead.
Yeah. Well, no.
Yeah. I don't think you get that kind of reaction towards them.
No, probably not.
All right. 756, the Booty's at 400 on 1620 The Zone.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.